then you don't want to turn around and then embedding hidden sales tax in the prices that they made. So if you say we're not going to tax food, then you don't want to tax food producers either. Because if you do, you know, you're not being quite straight with people. You're saying we find it necessary to provide relief, but at the same time, we don't want to provide relief. We want to tax you in a hidden way.
But if you go down that path, then what sort of situations do you have to put in place? I mean, isn't there some federal rule about not being able to, or can't tax?
Yeah, SNAP is always going to be out. Food stuff.
But then also, along with that, what about it trying to avoid it being a burden for low-income taxpayers?
Well, your SNAP program works to relieve the burden on low-income households. I mean, you've got that program. You're not going to levy the sales tax on their food purchases. Because if you do, you're going to be ineligible for the SNAP program, which you probably don't want to be. But see, the SNAP program does something that the general food exemption cannot do, and that is the SNAP program targets the relief on low-income households. The general food exemption wastes relief on everybody. I mean, you know, when Warren Buffett goes to the grocery store, he doesn't have to pay sales tax on his food. My guess is he's perfectly willing to, but he's got the relief. You've wasted that relief by broadcasting it to everybody. The SNAP program says we're tying tax relief to deserving relief. Okay, and that 43% of people with households with income over $75,000, I've factored the SNAP program into that. Okay, so I said, okay, the SNAP program is outside the calculation.
Thank you, Chairman Adams. Two questions, and I'm going to follow up on the SNAP and the tax on food to begin with. Would you advocate then for a tax credit for those below a certain level of income to make up for that food tax, sales tax on food?
If you have a broad-based income tax in place, you have a perfect device for distributing targeted assistance. Now, the problem is, I should mention the state of Indiana was the first state to have that program in place, and we're also the first state to replace it with a food exemption. And there's a long story on that. But the problem is that if you look at lots and lots of states' data, you find that there's about 3% or so of the people that you think, based on your demographic data, that ought to be receiving the credit, that don't get it. And you don't know why they don't get it. I mean, it may be that they are so far below the poverty line that they're just, you know, they're not filing an income tax return. They don't know how to file an income tax return. They're just out of the system and they're really dirt poor, in which case you worry. But maybe they're tax cheats. You know, maybe they are people that ought to be filing income tax returns and aren't. college students who actually live in somewhere else, or they're transient or whatever. But after you've taken out the things you know to take out, it's still about 3%.
And then I just want to follow up on your table 10.
Yes.
That you exhibit 10 in your...
I refuse to talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It appears to me that not all 50 states are mentioned in here. Yeah, that's what I counted too.
Yeah, there are 45 states with retail sales taxes.
Because why?
Because there are only 45 states that have retail sales taxes. So I've left off
the ones that don't.
Oregon, Alaska, Montana, Delaware, Oregon, New Hampshire. They're not.
And are those states that don't collect it, is it generally because they're... Is there a reason why they don't? Is it, for instance, I see Alaska's missing their minimum wage. Are there, is there something similar or common among the states that don't have a sales tax?
You know, it's kind of in their blood. They just, at some point, Nebraska, New Hampshire has a really small public sector. And they rely on local governments as opposed to the state government. And they just refuse to have an income tax, and they refuse to have a general sales tax. They prefer to finance their operations from property taxes and sales of alcoholic beverages to people from Massachusetts. Delaware, they just choose to rely on income tax. Oregon has had four statewide referenda on adoption of state sales tax, and it always fails. They have really high state income taxes and really high property taxes as a result. And Montana's sort of in the same category as Alaska. They have periodically discussed sales taxes. Every 10 years or so, they'll call me up to talk about it. But it just never happened. It just accidents, I think.
Thank you.
Dr. Maxwell, has the technology caught up enough with us that maybe we don't have to use the income tax credit for the lower income food? I'm sure that we no longer have coupons for the SNAP program and things like that. Why couldn't we use a type of card system where the state controls it, and that way they get the credit when they buy something at a grocery store, they just don't pay?
Yeah, that, I think it's possible. I don't know what the cost would be.
Okay.
My guess is that the cost is a lot of doing that is a lot lower now than
yes.
it once was. I'm not aware of anyone that's actually run the numbers to figure out what it would be, but certainly that's a possibility. There's also some people worry about privacy questions sometimes because you're linking up behavior for individual people. There's also worries sometimes about fraud. Fraudulent use of the card. I suppose you put a picture on the card and try to work it that way. But then, you know, what do you do if mom sends the kid to the store to buy bread and milk? You know, it's not the kid's picture on the card. So I don't know. It'd be an interesting experiment to try because it certainly looks like an idea that might work. But no one's tried it yet.
Senator Burson, then Senator Norquist.
I'll defer to Senator Norquist. I don't mind
chairman. All right. Well, maybe you can address this concern that if it goes back to your comment of the mugger versus the pickpocket, and that if we were to move to a system where we had no business inputs taxed, I would think that the complexity of just oversight of that type of system would be much more greater. You gave the example of the Caterpillar and the Ford truck. Well, now, if you have businesses buying iPhones and pens and pencils, how do we ensure that someone doesn't set up a consulting firm so they can buy all their household goods tax-free?
Well, some households that hold goods would be fairly easy. The consulting firm going to buy bread, that would be an issue. But there's always a problem with mixed use. And you can bring your revenue commissioner in to ask, but in most states, there are problems with the system that we have now, the use of the suspension certificate. The dirty little secret of the suspension certificate is that the only way it works is if the retailer makes it work. Okay? And the retailer is in a potentially difficult situation. Someone comes to his store and wants to use the suspension certificate to make a purchase, a big ticket purchase, and the vendor believes in his heart of hearts that it's not for use by the business in an exempt fashion. It's for the purchaser to take it home and use it at home. So if the vendor says, no, I won't accept your certificate, what happens? The guy leaves. The sale is lost to somebody else. So it's even with the structure that we have now, it's not easy. Misuse of exemptions is a continuing problem in sales tax administration. And at least I shouldn't say that. I haven't talked to your commissioner.
Yeah.
I've talked to other revenue commissioners, but not to yours.
Well, we'll do that. Real quick, on the Exhibit 3 that breaks down by business purchases.
Yes.
Is your argument that it's best economic policy that lower sales tax on business will create greater economic activity? And have you done? Has there been any analysis done comparing the states that do have lower business purchase?
There is a paper in progress that a colleague and I are working on. The answer is yes, it does have an impact. But it's not ready for prime time. You can't directly use these data to do the analysis because these data are driven partly by the structure of the tax and partly by the structure of the economy. Separating out those two influences is the great barrier to answering the question.
Great, thank you.
But
thank
we've
you.
We've got a way to answer it in a different way.
Great, thank you for being here.
There is an impact.
Senator Persh.
Thank you. And so, if I'm taking it right, with respect to food sales tax, your recommendation is that the state add food as a taxable transaction. And albeit perhaps utilizing some sort of a tax credit for the for those of little means, have you had a chance to look at Nebraska in specific and to determine what that would be, what the state would likely in a broad ballpark range be in a position to
raise? I haven't looked at Nebraska in particular. I wasn't asked to.
Sure.
Nor did I have time to.
Yeah, no, and that's...
You avoid some funny situations, you know, like, for instance, in the recent past, the state of Iowa decided that pumpkins were being bought for non-food purposes around Halloween. And so they decided to tax pumpkins. Made USA Today and other media and so on. That it was possible that a purchaser of a pumpkin could file a certificate in which they promised to eat the pumpkin. And tax refund. taxed, you relieve lots of administrative costs.
We used to have the dilly bar rule. If you bought one dilly bar, the Dairy Queen was taxable. When you bought 12, you were taking them home for consumption at home. It wasn't taxable. Senator Shoemaker.
Thank you, Senator Adley. You seem like you spent a lot of time contemplating the tax issues and the problems the state and local governments have. We have 1.8 million people here, and we've got to get about $5,000 or $6,000 a piece out of each and every one on average. If knowing what you know in that situation, if you were kind of charged with were charged with, and you just started from scratch, how would you design a tax system? How would you deploy sales, consumptive, or income and property tax? What kind of mix? What would we see from you?
Well, you've heard about diversification, balance. I know because I was here this morning for a while. And there is an advantage to having more than one tax. The disadvantage of having more than one tax that you're relying on is you're more easily concealing the true cost of government to the public. They don't. If you're getting all your revenue from one tax, then people can see exactly what the cost of government is and can make possibly more informed decisions. But the problem of very heavy reliance on any particular tax is that you never have gotten it right. You never have the tax perfectly structured. And the more revenue that you try to raise from that tax, the more significant the defects become. Okay? If you're raising 25% of state revenues from this particular tax base, the problems don't get really bad. They're kind of a problem, but not a big problem. If you try to raise all your revenue from that tax, you're going to have a very high tax rate, and all of the defects become very extreme. If you're levying a 1% tax on something, people don't go out of their way to try to avoid or evade the tax or to change their behaviors. If you're levying a 25% tax rate on that base, more is at stake, and so people will start playing games. So the basic principle is don't overuse any tax base. Okay? Do the best you can with a limited number of bases that you've structured as well as possible, but don't even think about trying to do one. That's maybe more convoluted than it should be.
Well, yeah, actually pretty straightforward, but we basically developed three tax bases here, and I'm trying to keep them balanced. Some people think we're a little heavy on one or the other. But nevertheless, is there some adjustments, or are we on the line with respect to the other states in how we balance that three-legged stool, from what you can tell?
Well, I haven't explicitly looked at that question. Thank you.
Senator Hanson.
Thank you. I really enjoyed your explanation of the pyramiding effect, and we certainly do that in Nebraska. Give you one example that you weren't assigned to look at the Nebraska tax code. We have taxes here that, to give you an example, we bought a new wind rower that just all does mowing. We got the wind rower, and it was over $100,000 for a wind rower. And it was put on the personal property tax, no sales tax, because it originally was sales tax. Not sales tax exempt, but we pay personal property, which is about, over the 7 years, is about the same amount. We have to go in and the life of that machine. but it's taxed in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a convoluted system. We have a bill next year to take care of that, maybe, but, and that's one thing the other tax studies have shown, that repair parts on ag equipment and manufacturing should be exempted from sales tax. I appreciate your explanation. I know more now than I did before about pyramid. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hadley.
I was afraid I was getting too much into the weeds on that.
Professor, at one point in your presentation, you said you were going to talk about the VAT tax, and I'd like to come back to that. Can you talk a little bit about, is the VAT tax something that should be looked at in any states? I mean, you see it a lot, certainly when you foreign travel.
I am not convinced that it works at the state level. Okay, because the way it works is that in the supply chain, each purchase by business is subject to tax, and each sale of the business is subject to the tax, and the proceeds of the tax on the sale reimburse the business for the tax that it paid. Now, that works within a kind of a closed system where each business is buying and selling to businesses within the state. But that's not the case in the United States. When you have a business in Nebraska that's making purchases from businesses in Oklahoma, and it's making sales to businesses in Iowa, and it's hard for me to figure out how you make that credit rebate structure work when you've got a number of different tax systems in place. It works marvelously at the national level, or could work. It works marvelously in Australia and New Zealand and places like that. It's too complicated in England.
Thank you.
You've already talked about it.
She's not.
Thank you, Senator. Professor, I'd like you to comment a little bit more about your discussion of the taxation of services and the distinction between business and household. I wasn't whether you were wanting a distinction between the two or...
Yes. Exactly the same logic applies to purchases as to services as applies to goods. If a household buys it, it should be taxed. It's part of household consumption spending. If a business buys it, it's a business input, and you don't want to tax it for the reasons of pyramiding and so on. Now, you're going to have lots of mixed use problems here. Okay. If I hire an accountant to do my federal income tax, the amount that I pay the accountant should be subject to sales tax, because that's part of my household consumption expenditure. If the guy that owns the 7-Eleven hires the same accountant to do his income tax for his business, or the sales tax return for his business, you don't want to tax it, because that's part of his input cost.
And if an individual has the same accountant do their return for their businesses, or
their personal return, their business return, one would be taxed ideally, and the other would not be taxed ideally. And you know, I'm not suggesting that that's an easy distinction, but it's a distinction. If you decide that you're going to extend the tax generally to services, then you need to make this distinction, to figure out some way to make the distinction, because otherwise you're going to be in the pyramiding problem. And the pyramiding sector because there are lots and lots of service businesses that are small. Okay? Single proprietor, accountants, landscapers, lawyers, and so on. And that's just exactly the sort of thing that can get discriminated against by a large business.
Thank you. And I want to follow up on that because I do have a question, and then I want to ask you a separate question. If the convenience store is owned by an LLC,
yeah,
and it flows through to the individual, how do you tax that?
Well, I guess if the return is the LLC's return.
The LLC, but the LLC, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have, the income tax liability is going to be passed through. Right, but there's some accounting done at the business level,
yeah,
and the accounting at the business level would be a business input, and the return, income tax return filing for the owner would be a household consumption expenditure, which would be logically taxed. It gets sticky.
And I want to go back to an earlier, follow up on an earlier question, and this goes back to the food, and it's about the input to food. And the question was asked, well, since we don't tax the final product, should we maybe tax part of the production? And your response was, and if I'm, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, if I'm incorrect, let me know, was we don't want to do that because then we are in essence taxing the final product.
Yes.
Except that.
You're taxing the purchaser of the final product.
Yeah, except that. Let's say we tax the input in the farming. You then have a neutral party in there, the Cargills of the world. And Cargill doesn't really care whether that farmer is paying an input to inventory or not. So it doesn't really affect the price that Cargill pays because it's a supply and demand issue. It's not, well, how much is the farmer paying, therefore that's what we'll pay. Am I making, is that clear? Does that make sense?
Well, the stuff that the farmer is selling to Cargill is almost never going to be taxed under any regime because it's probably a component part.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It doesn't really go to the farmer's profit and loss. It doesn't go to the cost of the final product. Because Cargill pays the same amount, they don't care if the corn comes from Nebraska, where there's an input, yeah, versus Iowa versus Indiana. Right.
And they're not going to be paying sales tax on that purchase anywhere. Because it's a component part, or a physical an ingredient in the process, usually.
Senator Mark, so what time is your flight leave?
It leaves at 5.
Leaves at 5. Okay, well, we're getting closer to time. Yes, Senator Campbell.
Thank you, Senator Hadley. Professor, obviously, we use the tax structure to raise revenue to pay for the state's services and programs. If we don't do that on a business, and I understand the logic that you're moving through, is the assumption at the end that really the business is going to pay for the services and programs that a state would provide through the corporate income tax, not through the sales tax?
There are other ways of applying a tax to a business.
To cover those services.
Business profits, business property, user charges. Not so much state level, particularly the local level. Direct charges are a decent approach.
Thank you.
I think, anything else? Professor, thank you very much. We appreciate your taking your time to come out to Nebraska. We promise to treat you well in the Big Ten. We don't want to play you in basketball. That would be a non-starter, but we'd like to have a home and home in football if we could.